Thank you. eBay.
No way. Nice. Oh, yeah. Good way to be. Hey guys, it's Shannon from iHeartRadio Canada here with Thomas Rhett. Hello, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. We were just talking about how nice Canadians are. So
yeah, I'm
thank
sorry.
You for that.
I'm very sorry.
And how much we apologize. Which
I'm kidding. I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah, and you're a big fan of Canadians. You're glad to be back in Canada.
So glad. We met up here since I guess like the 8th of this month, and started in Vancouver and made our way all the way over here. And man, every single night is it's such a treat. And to be here in Toronto tonight, I've never played this building before, so I'm very excited to be here.
Yeah, it's a good place to be. I saw you repping the Raptors jersey. You're already an honorary Toronto.
For sure. An honorary Raptor.
Yeah.
I shot on their practice court today very poorly.
Did you actually?
Yes, very poorly, but it was a blast.
Yeah. You're no good at basketball?
No, zero.
Not your sport?
Zero talent at all.
Really?
Yeah.
Is there a sport that you're good at?
Not really.
No.
No.
Yeah.
Golf-ish.
Okay. Maybe stick
still
to
not a great golf. Still not a great golf.
I love that. Something that you are though is a very hard worker. That's something that like I feel like comes up a lot when people are talking about you and things like that. And a lot of people I find will strive to be good in the music industry, but you have gone beyond that, and I feel like you've just like reached such greatness. So what is it about that gives you that work ethic that makes you want to just like strive for so much?
I don't know. Do you have any more compliments you want to throw my way?
Great hat. I already told you before.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I mean, my dad worked really hard. My stepdad worked really hard. I feel like I was just taught how to grind at a young age, you know. And I was always kind of one of those kids that could figure out a way to get what I needed. If that makes any sense. Like, if my dad said no, I was going straight to my grandmother. If my grandmother said no, I was going to my mom. And in some way, like, this business is not that different from a kid trying to get what they want. And for me, it was just bearing down, writing a million terrible songs to find one good one, you know? And in everything that we do, me and the band, we just kind of obsess over. Like, we rehearse entirely too long, with the goal being in mind of, like, when we get to show one, it's almost like we've already been on tour for 6 months. And so, I don't know. I've got a great support system with my family at home, and I've got a great team that just continues to lift me up and let me be me.
Yeah.
I think that's been the most important part, is that I've been able to stay me through this whole thing. So.
Totally. I do have other words that you've used to describe yourself, which is an overthinker,
correct,
competitive, and a perfectionist,
which
you touched on a little bit there. So what do you feel like is the benefits of having those qualities, and then what do you feel like is the opposite of that?
Man, perfectionism, I've learned in my 32 years on this earth, does not exist.
Yeah.
And so it's a big weight off your shoulders when you realize you can't be perfect. But to strive for it is a different thing, you know? So for me, if I can leave a show saying, man, I don't feel like the crowd was super in it tonight, but we gave 1,000,000%, I can't hang my head on that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But if I walk out there and I'm like, I kind of skimped on that song, and then I can be frustrated because I didn't give it my all, you know? So, but I think on the perfectionist front, when it comes to songwriting, hobbies, you know, fly fishing, hunting, whatever it is, I go very hard into the paint on that. Even just building like toys with my kids, I'm like, oh, this has to be perfect, you know?
Right.
And so I think the biggest downfall for me is coming home and not being able to turn off that perfectionist brain and just be with my kids rather than like make everything a competition, you know? Like, even we got a basketball goal last week because my older two are starting to play, and you know, they would miss shots and be like, no, this is how you do it. You know, you put your arm like, and I'm just like,
this
stop.
Isn't fun anymore. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's all got its pros and cons.
Yeah.
But
do you see any of those qualities in your kids already? Do they have that competitiveness and things like that?
Yeah. My 5-year-old Ada James is exactly like me.
Right.
And Willa Gray is exactly like Lauren.
Oh, yeah.
Lennon is a little bit too young to tell, and Lily's too young to tell, but Ada James definitely has that competitive, like, if she kind of screws up during a basketball game, she's like looking at me immediately being like, I just messed up. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay. Like, it's all good. You know, and I hate that I've passed that down. So, but I've got a long time to help break that for myself. So hopefully it breaks in her too.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Totally. Do you spend any time writing on the road, or do you keep that kind of separate?
You know, I feel like I've written the last 3 records on the road.
Yeah.
This year is like the first year that I've decided to do way more of it at home. Mm-hmm. It's just like a lot of decision making during the day. And then you have a show as well. So, at least on this tour, I've not had any writers out really focusing on the night and making sure that the show is as good as it can be. But really just during my off time this year, I've just planned a bunch of writing camps and really be able to kind of take that one thing and hone in on that. So
right. Yeah. How far do you look ahead when it comes to that? Do you already have an idea of like, oh, this is what I want my next album to sound like?
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, you're kind of always, even before your next record comes out, you're thinking like, what is the next one going to feel like?
Yeah.
You know, so
Having been in the music industry for a long time and also seeing your dad in the music industry has given you, I'm sure, like such a unique perspective that not a lot of people have. How do you feel like country music has changed in like the past decades, whether that comes to like the subject matter of songs or relationships with fans, things like that?
I feel like the better question is how has it not? I mean, it's just changed in every way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, when my dad was doing this, like if you didn't sell records and have hits on radio, you were done.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And like, I feel like today it's kind of like artists are sparking up by what, you know, via TikTok and streaming numbers that don't make any sense. And, you know, radio play before the song is even a single or whatever it is. And so I just feel like today more so than ever, you kind of have to be the most you that you can, because I feel like if you do try to copy or chase, you're just an alt version of so-and-so, you know what I'm saying? And so for me, like moving forward, like into this next record, it's, there's like this freedom that comes with it of just kind of being like, man, I've done 10 years of this and I've had 20 number one songs. And there's kind of a freedom that comes along with being like, man, let's go say whatever we feel like saying, and let's make it sound however we feel like it should sound, you know,
right.
Because I feel like there's so many different sounding songs on the radio today that are working, you know, and
right.
I think people are craving diversity on the radio.
Yeah.
And so, I've always kind of done that in my career. I've always kind of chased sounds that weren't really happening in our genre. And, you know, in the beginning it was like, what are you doing? And then all of a sudden it's like, it's kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's what a lot of the artists that are crushing it right now are doing. They're just being uniquely them and it's working.
Yeah. And genre crossing too.
No doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Katy Perry coming on your track.
Yeah.
Dipping into country. Is there a genre that you feel like you would want to explore outside of country?
R&B.
R&B?
Yeah.
We're going to get a Thomas Rhett like rap verse on a song?
Yeah. One day.
Yeah?
One day. I would love to make a full R&B funk soul album. I mean,
I'd
that's
love
like,
to see that.
That's Soundcheck. That's all we do is just play like funk songs and John Mayer covers and like all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that would be really fun, but maybe not for the next record. We'll see.
Yeah. The one after that.
Okay,
we'll hold you to that. That's on camera, so we'll make it happen. What do you feel like is the key to onstage banter? Because you are also known for having like such good banter on stage, which I feel like is an art form in itself, and it's not something that people focus on as much.
Yeah.
But there's got to be like something behind that.
I don't know.
No?
I mean... So most of the time, I don't even remember what I've said.
You just,
like, me and the band were talking about it. You ever seen that show called Severance?
Yeah.
You kind of, like, once you cross the elevator floor, it's like your work brain turns on, and then you go back down to the first level, and then you don't remember what you just did.
Yeah.
So, in many ways, this is that.
Right.
Like, we were talking about, I was like, do y'all remember anything that happened tonight? It happened 20 minutes ago, and we're like, I don't. It's almost like a switch that flips in your brain, and you're still you, but you're the performer version of you, and it's all authentic and it's all real, but when you walk off stage you're such in this like trance of like, this is 90 minutes of what I was born to do,
right?
And so for me like banter is just like how would I talk to a buddy right now, and that's how I talk to 10,000 people.
Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
I don't know,
it
just kind of comes out.
This is kind of similar, but I host a radio show, and and I'll go home and my girlfriend will be like, what did you talk about on the show today?
Don't remember.
Like, I literally couldn't tell you.
That's what makes you great.
Yeah, you do it day after day, right?
For sure.
It's the same thing, for sure. As someone like myself who's only played Duck Hunter, like the video game, what is something that the average person might not understand about the difficulties of that sport?
Of duck hunting,
yeah.
Man, there's so many things involved. The weather's got to be right.
Okay.
The sun needs to be out. Mm. The wind needs to be blowing for ducks to land in your decoy pile. The decoys have to look like decoys. They can't just, like, throw decoys out there and expect ducks to land. Got to have somebody that's, like, really good at calling. The dogs need to sit still. I mean, I just go with people that are good at it. and somehow, you know, we do a good job. But, it's... Honestly, duck hunting is one of those things. Like, I love to hunt, but duck hunting is different because you're literally just in a blind with, like, eight of your best friends. And whether you see a duck or not, you just got to freeze with your friends and have a good conversation.
Right.
So
I asked Jordan Davis the same question this morning, and he gave almost the exact same answer. So, yeah, he's like, it doesn't even matter if you get anything. You're just, like, out with your friends.
You're out with your friends. And it's about the only kind of hunting that you can, like, talk and crack up.
Right.
You know, while birds are flying, but
yeah, true. Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time.
For sure.
It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise. Thank you.
Awesome.